This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Meet Cute. Stories by Jennifer L. Armentrout, Danielle Clayton, Katie Cotugno, Jocelyn Davies, Huntley Fitzpatrick, Nina LaCour, Emery Lord, Catherine McGee, Cass Morgan, Julie Murphy, Meredith Russo, Sarah Shepard, Nicola Yoon, and E.B. Zaboy. Read for you by a full cast.
Siege Etiquette by Katie Cotugno. Read by Caitlin Davies. You're getting another beer in the kitchen and watching two badly dressed sophomores try not to be too obvious about the fact that they're staring at you when the cops show up outside Madison Campbell's house. Uh-oh, Jay says when he spies them. You follow his gaze through the living room window where, sure enough, two cruisers are gliding to the curb with their lights flashing, silent as sharks.
Friends are here.
Right away, he heads down the stairs to the basement, motioning for you to follow without actually waiting to see if you do. Boyfriend or not, you guess you can't really blame him. After all, it's not like you get in trouble anymore.
Everybody down!
Nicole calls from the hallway, flicking the kitchen lights off so you're plunged into darkness, save the glow of the water dispenser on the front of the stainless steel fridge. Nicole's parents are both law professors an hour away from here at Cornell, and firm believers in the importance of exercising one's constitutional rights.
Never, never open up the door to the police unless they have a warrant,
you've heard them say, over a number of bagel breakfasts at Nicole's kitchen table. Same as other parents would remind you to make sure to be home by curfew.
Somebody get the rest of the lights!
Are you serious?
A panicky-looking freshman asks, as everyone dashes for cover, into bedrooms and under coffee tables, inside the immaculately organized pantry.
You're not going to let them in? Do you want to go to jail?
Nicole snaps, which seems a little dramatic.
Turn off the music! They'll be gone in a minute.
You're not entirely sure about that, actually, but before you can register your concerns, the bell is ringing. The police are knocking hard and insistent on the front door, glowing flashlights visible through the frosted glass. The combination of noise and sound sets something off in you, a cold animal panic. Suddenly, it feels very important to hide. You scurry up the short flight of stairs off the foyer and through the closest door, shutting it firmly behind you before turning around and realizing that A, it's the bathroom, and B, Wolf Goshen is sitting on the edge of the tub in the dark.
Hi,
he says. You say.
Fuck.
Hi. Sorry, Wolf says, standing up and wiping his hands on his jeans.
I can get out of here if you have to. I mean, everybody was just yelling to hide and stuff. I kind of panicked.
No, I don't need to. You exhale, heart pounding with a savage ferocity wholly disproportionate to the seriousness of the situation. That happens to you sometimes now. The cops are still ringing the doorbell. I mean, that's why I'm in here, too.
Oh,
Wolf nods, shoving his hands into his pockets.
Okay.
You look at each other for a moment. You breathe. Wolf has been in your class since kindergarten, but you've never actually talked to him before. He only ever comes for half the year because of some arcane agricultural law that lets him be homeschooled for the fall semester so he can help his parents at their farm 30 miles outside Ithaca, one of the last working family-owned operations in the entire state of New York. Every autumn you forget about him, and every January he shows up at school again, blinking and dazed, like he's spent the last 6 months wandering dumbly through a cornfield. You've never seen him at a party before in your life.
I came with my cousin, he explains, like he can see you wondering, as if he thinks you're going to ask to see his pass.
You think he might be afraid of you. You'd probably be afraid of you if you were Wolf.
You know Jared? He dates Madison now, so I came with him.
You nod, not particularly caring.
God, this whole night sucks.
You're about to make an excuse and get the hell out of here, but before you can come up with something plausible, The beam of a flashlight shines directly through the bathroom window, and like an instinct, you're grabbing Wolf's arm and jerking roughly, pulling him back into the shadows beside the tub.
"Sorry," you say once the light has moved away again. "Close call."
"It's okay."
Wolf sits back down on the edge of the bathtub. When you were little kids, he was notorious for falling asleep at his desk every day during free read. His fingernails were always too long. You remember not wanting to get stuck next to him in line, or at lunchtime, or in the Star Lab, a traveling planetarium that came to school every year, all of you crawling into a big inflatable tent in the middle of the gym to look up at the constellations.
"Don't be giving that boy a hard time, Haley,"
your mom scolded when you came home and complained about it. You were already popular back in elementary school, and she was worried it was going to turn you mean.
"He's got enough trouble without you piling on."
It occurs to you, all of a sudden, that you never actually asked her what that meant. The police are still banging on the front door, insistent.
"Madison Campbell!"
a man's voice calls, authoritative.
"I know your parents, Madison, and they're gonna want you to open the door now."
Madison's parents are in Harrisburg, dealing with some kind of disciplinary clusterfuck at her brother's boarding school. For a second, you feel kind of bad for them.
"This happened a lot?" Wolf asks.
You sit down on the lid of the toilet seat. "Sometimes," you allow. "They'll be gone in a minute." In fact, you're not at all as confident as you sound. You've waited out the police in this very house before, plus once at Amber Dooley's, and another time, memorably, while fooling around in a coat closet with Jay at Nicole's. Normally, the partiers lay low. The police get bored or tired or hungry, and eventually they go away. But this feels different. The last week of summer, two juniors drank a 12-pack of Budweiser and killed almost a whole fucking family at the intersection down by the Walmart. And now it's like the whole town thinks everybody else is breathtakingly stupid enough to do what they did. It occurs to you, as you listen to the incessant banging on the front door of the house, that the McCormick County Sheriff's Department might be looking to make a point. "Well," you think, pulling your legs up on the toilet seat and wrapping your arms around your knees, "let them make it, if that helps them." Wolf is glancing at you across the bathroom, seemingly unconcerned about the scrum of law enforcement out on the front lawn. It's his first party, after all. You guess it's not like he's got anything to compare it to.
"Should have brought snacks,"
he says, sliding off the lip of the bathtub and making himself comfortable on the tile floor, crossing his legs at the ankles, and before you can respond either way, he grins.
"You remember how Mrs. Hollander used to give out atomic fireballs during tests?"
That surprises you. Mrs. Hollander taught fourth grade.
"I was obsessed with those things," Wolf says. "Every day I used to ask her if we could have them. Like, I used to get so excited for tests, just so I could cram a bunch of fireballs into my mouth and chow down. And finally, one day, she kept me after the last bell, and I thought I was in trouble. But it turned out she'd been at the dollar store and gotten this giant tub of fireballs just for me. She told me I was going to make myself sick, but of course I walked outside and ate like 100 of them all at once. Burned all my taste buds off. And that wasn't even the worst of it. Anyway, that was the end of me and fireballs."
He shuts up abruptly then, shrugging his shoulders.
"I'm rambling."
"It's okay," you say. You kind of liked listening to him, actually. Nobody has talked to you about something as stupid as atomic fireballs in months. "I don't mind." Just then your phone buzzes with a text from Nicole.
"Where are you?"
she wants to know. The question followed by a long row of screaming emojis.
"Upstairs bathroom," you text back. "WTF are you doing up there? We're all in the basement. Come down now."
You look at the screen for a moment, then back at Wolf. You don't know if you've ever actually bothered to look at him before. Like in your head, he was a walking, sentient wheat stalk. That's not the impression you get now at all. His clothes are clean, if a little bit trashy. Light-washed jeans and a faded T-shirt with the Ghostbusters logo on it.
plus a pair of knockoff Timberland boots. His eyes are bright and intelligent and sharp. He could do okay, you think, in a place like New York City or California, where the past doesn't cling like the smell of dirty laundry. Unfortunately for him, this is a suburb of Syracuse. People have long memories here. You turn your phone over so the screen is facing down, tucking it underneath you on the toilet seat. "How's your senior year going so far?" you ask him, then immediately feel like an idiot, remembering that he hasn't even set foot in school yet this year. I mean, such as it is. Wolf's mouth twists at that, not quite a smile. Can't complain, I guess. He tilts his head to the side, looking up at you. How's yours?
Good,
you chirp like a reflex, which is, of course, a giant lie, and not even a good one. And you're thinking that of course Wolf knows that, until the moment that it suddenly occurs to you that he might not. After all, who can say what the hell news makes its way out to the Goshen family farm during harvest season? It might as well be medieval times over there. The idea of him not knowing makes them oddly compelling to you. Like here is the one person in all of New York State to whom you're exactly the same as you used to be. You want to keep up the facade.
I'm applying to schools, mostly.
Are you? You start, then break off. But there's nowhere to go but forward.
Applying to schools?
Wolf smirks at that. No, Haley, he says quietly. I am not applying to schools. Something about the way he says your name makes your stomach do a strange flip. You've never heard him say it before. You look down at your hands in your lap, at your manicure. You and Nicole went to the nail place this afternoon. She's been your best friend since 9th grade, which doesn't mean she probably doesn't talk about you when you get up and leave the room, just like everyone else does. It's entirely possible she's talking about you right now. Wolf reaches up and picks a fat candle off the side of the bathtub, probably pumpkin or a cinnamon bun or something equally disgusting, and roots around in his pocket until he comes up with a book of matches. There, he says, lighting it and setting it back on the side of the tub.
Is that a good idea?
You ask, motioning to the window.
They can't see it,
Wolf says, and for some reason you believe him. He looks oddly handsome in the flicker of the candlelight, all sharp cheekbones and serious expression. Nicole will die if you tell her that. You might not tell Nicole anything about this at all.
This is a really ugly bathroom, you observe instead of thinking about it, looking around at the faux Mexican tile and brightly painted sink, the sunken bathtub that looks like its sole purpose was orgies in the 1970s.
Above the toilet is a framed stock photo of a baby wearing a shower cap and holding a rubber duck.
I never really stopped to notice it before.
Oh, I don't know, Wolf says, peering around. I could sit in here all day, personally. Have a bubble bath, read a romance novel.
You laugh at that, surprisingly. You didn't expect Wolf Goshen to be funny. Like, maybe he's from some place where laughter is verboten. And then you realize what a stupid thing that is to think.
Use a bath bomb, you add.
Wolf shakes his head.
What's a bath bomb?
He asks.
It's like a fizzy soap thing, you try to explain.
You put it in the tub, and it kind of explodes and bubble bath and sometimes glitter comes out.
Wolf considers it. That sounds like a gigantic mess, he says.
Sometimes, you agree.
You look at each other for a moment. Neither one of you says anything. You remember suddenly a morning in the spring of 3rd grade when he came into school with a hole in the collar of his t-shirt and a bruise the size of a new potato on his cheek. You remember how afraid it made you. Not for Wolf, but of him. Like maybe black eyes were catching somehow. The memory makes you feel about 2 inches tall. The police are still shouting Madison's name, doorbell chiming. It reminds you stupidly of the Siege of Bastogne, which was part of the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. Lately, when you can't sleep, which is often, You've been reading all the old history books from the shelves in your dad's office, poring over maps and committing battle plans to memory. You still have circles under your eyes the color of overripe eggplants, but you think chances are good you'll pass the AP U.S. history test at the end of the year. Wolf tilts his head toward the window, listening.
Doesn't really sound like they're giving up, huh?
You smile, though it isn't actually funny.
The Siege of the Stone lasted for 7 days.
Nope, you agree. For an instant, you wonder what might happen if you strolled out onto Madison's lawn right now, waved to the police in the porch light. Hey, guys, it's me, your good buddy Haley. Let's all call this off and go home. Your butt is starting to fall asleep on the toilet seat, so you slide to the floor and stick your legs out in front of you, your knees a few inches from Wolf's. He's got his hands folded in his lap, like he's praying. He's got long fingers and round, knobby knuckles, the nails bitten way far down. You imagine them tending an animal or fixing some kind of complicated machinery, which immediately makes you feel like an idiot. God, you must be further gone than you thought. Your phone chimes again then, insistent.
Are you okay?
Nicole demands. You can picture them all down in the basement, draped over armchairs and sitting cross-legged on the carpet, stifling giggles in the arms of their hoodies. You used to wonder if Nicole might have a crush on Jay, back when you used to care about things like that. You think she might resent you a little, especially lately, although you know she would never admit it. You think you might resent you, if you were her. You switch the phone over to silent and tuck it back under your butt, but when you look up again, Wolf is watching you.
What are you doing up here?
He asks suddenly, in a voice like the thought has just occurred to him that possibly this might be a trick.
What?
You don't understand the question. Same thing as you're doing, you say.
Yeah, but, like, why are you up here with me and not downstairs?
His face has changed, gotten sharper somehow.
I mean, what are you after?
What? You say again, stalling for time. You can't tell him the truth, which is that you're up here with him in this bathroom because you cannot bear to be down in the basement with people who know you, because you cannot bear to be anywhere at all. Telling him will break the spell, which is the whole point of being up here to begin with.
I'm not after anything.
He shakes his head.
People like you are always after something.
Seriously?
Your spine straightens up against the bathroom door.
People like me?
Wolf shakes his head.
You know what I mean.
I don't, actually.
Suddenly you're spoiling for a fight, craving it even. Lately everyone is so fucking nice to you. There's a certain dark pleasure in this sudden nastiness. It feels good. It feels normal.
And you don't know anything about me.
I'm not stupid, Wolf insists, as if you've called him stupid, which you have not. If you're up here with me instead of with them, there's a reason why.
Oh, I'm sorry,
you snap, drawing yourself up against the door and thrusting your shoulders back, your anger like a fire burning deep inside your chest. In one of your dad's books about the Civil War, you read that the only real advantage the North had was industry, that the round-the-clock shoveling of coal into giant roaring furnaces was the only reason the Union didn't fall. You think of that sometimes now, when the alarm goes off in the morning and you feel like you can't get out from under the covers. You imagine that you are a munitions factory. You imagine that you are a train.
What's wrong with my friends, exactly?
What?
Wolf looks stricken, like he thinks you're about to go completely insane on him here in Madison Campbell's mother's ugly bathroom. It's possible he knows the truth about you after all.
No, I'm not saying anything's wrong with your friends. I just...
You didn't seem to have a problem with them when you were tracking your dirty boots all over their houses and drinking their beer,
you say snottily. And that's good, you think with some nasty satisfaction. That's exactly the kind of thing the old you would have said.
Back when you were doing that, they were all just fine.
Wolf's eyes go hot and injured.
I didn't drink anything of theirs, he snaps.
His whole body is suddenly made of angles, all shoulders and knees.
Me and Jared, we stopped and got beers on the way over here. We aren't freeloading.
He sounds so upset that you feel yourself soften. No, I know, you say. I didn't mean... But you did mean, a little bit. And both of you know it. You were picking a fight, using him as some kind of messed-up scratching post. Your mother would be appalled. Sorry, you say finally, leaning your head back against the door. All the energy has drained out of you at once. That was bitchy. Wolf doesn't contradict you.
You don't know anything about me either, he points out. Do you think this is like my dream? Like I've spent my whole life just dying to be stuck in a bathroom at some lame party with you? Princess Haley Adkins?
That stings. Not the nickname. God knows you've been called worse. But the idea that he's doing you some kind of favor. You don't want anybody's pity. You never have.
A lot of people at school would die for exactly that chance, actually, you retort. Which is more than I can say for you.
Wolf blows a breath out, shakes his head a little.
Wow, he says, disbelieving. You're kind of exactly as horrible as everybody says you are, huh?
So then what the hell are you still doing in here with me?
Wolf shrugs.
That's a good question, actually, he says, and gets up. See you, Haley.
You remember something else then, pulled from the depths of your brain like a slimy scrum of seaweed. Seventh grade. Piss and Wolf's gym sneakers in the locker room. All the boys hooting gleefully about it down the hall. You didn't piss in them yourself, certainly. But you didn't help him either. You've been thinking that a lot lately. All the teeny tiny choices that can change your entire life.
That boy's got enough problems without you adding to them.
Wolf, stop, you say, reaching out and grabbing his ankle before you can think better of it.
It's warm and surprisingly solid through his jeans.
Can you just wait for a second?
What are you...
Wolf shakes you free, but gently.
Why?
You sigh loudly, and then you just say it.
Because I don't want you to leave.
Wolf makes a face at that, openly skeptical, but he does what you tell him, sitting back down beside you. Closer than he was before. He smells like soap and grass and leaves. Nothing like you remember from when you were a kid.
What?
He says, his voice low and flat. You think for a moment.
What's your favorite thing? You ask him. About working on the farm.
Wolf rolls his eyes.
Riding the tractor? He deadpans immediately. Picking my teeth with hay, ma'am?
Can you stop, you say, knowing you sound cranky. I'm asking you a sincere question.
You're right. I don't know jack all about you.
But I'm asking.
Wolf exhales loudly.
All right,
he says, leaning his head back against the door, the skin of his throat pale and exposed.
I like sleeping outside in the summer, I guess. My cousin Jared, who I came here with, we camp out most nights instead of staying indoors, and that's what I like.
He shrugs.
Sorry if it's not farm-specific enough for you.
That sounds nice, you lie.
Actually, it sounds terrifying. But to be fair, these days you're not exactly a good gauge of what's scary and what's not. You imagine it, staring up at the sky with nobody else around. Like if you weren't careful, you could fly right off the face of the earth and never be heard from again.
So what about you?
Wolf asks. He's not mad at you anymore. Or at least he's decided not to act like he is. You feel disproportionately relieved.
What's your favorite thing about being the queen bee?
I'm not the queen bee, you say automatically, which is also a lie, and both of you know it. But part of the power is in never having to admit it out loud. You're the most popular girl in your grade, or at least you were before everything happened. Now you kind of don't know what you are. A curiosity, maybe. Wolf snorts.
Okay.
You shrug. The truth is that your favorite thing about being popular is being able to control when and how people look at you and what they see when they do. Like you're the curator of a fancy museum and your only exhibit is yourself. The problem is that lately you haven't been able to do it. You've lost control of your own story somehow since everything happened. You can't figure out how to get it back.
I like having a lot of friends, you tell him finally.
It's a bullshit answer, but Wolf doesn't push.
Yeah, he says, putting his hand down beside yours on the cool bathroom tile.
That sounds nice, too.
You look at each other for a minute. You remind yourself that Jay is right downstairs.
You and Jay have been dating on and off since last fall, and by all high school metrics, he's a decent to good boyfriend. Lord knows he got more than he bargained for when he asked you out that day by the fountain at the Clearview Mall.
Still, every once in a while while you're talking, you can see that he might as well be on planet Mars for everything he's actually hearing.
There is something about Wolf Goshen that makes you think he'd listen for real. Then again, you think, even as your pinky inches closer to Wolf's on the tile. Maybe he wouldn't. You're dimly aware that you're making him up in your mind even as he's sitting here, like you're writing yourself into a story. You're dimly aware that Wolf is making you up, too. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe, for as long as you're in here, you can both be whoever you want.
You pull your legs up underneath you, look at him through your eyelashes in the dark.
It was your dream a little bit, though.
Right?
You ask him, smiling a little.
To be in here with me?
Wolf laughs at that. Are you serious right now?
He asks. But he's blushing. And you know you've won.
You are something else, truly.
You're about to tell him he's right. That you are something else. And that something can be his for one night only. When you hear a familiar voice trilling out across the driveway.
Jay? She's yelling. Jay Montalto, are you in there?
Oh, Jesus.
You scramble across the bathroom and peek out the window like a prairie dog. But you already know what you're going to see. It's Jay's mother, a big-haired Italian woman who has hated your guts from the time you started dating her son and continues to hate them now, which gives you a grudging kind of respect for her. It takes a set of brass balls to be mean to someone like you. Squinting through the screen, you can see a handful of faces you recognize. Jillian's parents, and Harper's. Even Nicole's parents' Volvo is parked down the street.
Shit, you say, turning back to look at Wolf.
Okay, this part has never happened before.
They called people's parents?
You shrug.
Some people's.
Wolf looks at you sharply.
Fuck,
he says. And you think you've alarmed him in the moment before you realize he's talking about his own. Maybe you really are as selfish as he thinks you are. For the first time all night, he looks sincerely afraid.
You don't think...
No, you tell him honestly. I don't think anybody would have thought to call yours. Wolf looks reassured by that, though not entirely.
No, he echoes. I guess not.
You're quiet for another minute. You can't stop staring out the window, even though you know somebody's going to see you. You guess it doesn't matter at this point. You guess none of it really does. Here is what will happen next. You'll go home with Nicole's parents and sleep on the spare bed in Nicole's bedroom, just like you have been for the last 2 months. Because your parents aren't out there waiting for you in the silver SUV you learned to drive on, angry at you for drinking and disrespecting authority, but relieved at the end of the night that you're safe. Your parents are in freshly dug graves at Woodlawn Cemetery 6 miles away from here, where they've been since two drunk juniors from your high school T-boned them on their way home from a dinner at TGI Fridays at the end of the summer. If they were still alive, you like to think they would want you to go out and live your fucking life.
Come here, you say, holding your hand out for Wolf in the darkness.
Why?
he asks, getting uncertainly to his feet.
Because, you say, letting the non-answer hang there. You have never been the aggressor in a situation like this in your entire life, and you find you do not hate it.
Wolf comes closer, cautious. He's taller than you are by nearly a foot. You reach up, put your hand on the back of his warm, shorn head, and kiss him.
You don't hate that either, it turns out.
He pulls back after a moment, blinking at you.
What was that for?
Keeping me company, you say, which is sort of the truth.
Okay,
Wolf says and smiles, kisses you again. He's not a great kisser, unpracticed and a little spitty, but you actually don't care about that at all. There are tiny explosions going off all over your body, like sparks flying up out of a campfire.
Wolf puts both hands on your face. You want to stay like this forever, even though you know it's impossible, that it's just a weird stopover. Like how during the Revolutionary War, the two armies took breaks and had Christmas together, then went back to shooting each other with muskets after the roasts were gone. You aren't sure where you got that fact, actually. You didn't read it in any of your dad's old books, and you don't know if it's true or just something someone made up to make the world seem less brutal. Here in this bathroom with Wolf Goshen, it feels like maybe it could possibly be real.
I'm not breaking up with Jay, you blurt finally, your face on fire, your whole body buzzing like a burned-out neon sign. It's hot in this bathroom, even with the window open. I'm not breaking up with Jay.
Wolf laughs at that, a quiet, baffled sound.
Jesus, Haley. Did you hear me asking you to? He says. But he bends down and kisses you again then, his hands finding yours by your sides, and you're opening your mouth to tell him maybe he should ask you to. You're actually about to say that when you hear the cops coming through the front door downstairs.
Everybody out!
A man's voice is yelling. Through the crack under the bathroom door, you can see that the lights have been flipped on in the hallway. Your heart is a siren wailing deep inside your chest.
Somebody must have let them in, Wolf says.
He's still holding your hands, your fingers twisting absently together. And it's like you both realize it at the same time, letting go too fast.
I bet it was that fucking freshman, you say, clearing your throat and pushing your hair behind your ears.
You're already thinking about how you're going to make her life a living hell come Monday. There are some benefits to being the queen bee.
Haley, Wolf begins, but you hold both your hands up. Suddenly you know just what he's going to say.
Don't, you interrupt, and you're surprised by how steady your voice sounds. You need to remember him as not knowing, even if that's not how he actually is.
I mean it. Whatever you're about to say to me, I just really want you to not say it.
Wolf looks at you.
Okay, he says quietly.
Yeah, of course.
He wipes his hands on his jeans and blows out the pumpkin candle, motions toward the door. On the other side of it, you can hear people shouting like the goddamn end of the world.
You ready?
He asks. You won't even see him in school, you realize. By the time he turns up again in January, you'll probably both have forgotten all about this. You swallow down a sour taste like panic in your mouth.
Yep, you say, because there's nothing to be done about it. There's nothing to do about any of it but to keep going.
I'm ready. Wolf moves aside to let you past him, your shoulders barely brushing. You've got your hand on the doorknob when he changes his mind.
Wait, he says then, and...
Haley. When you turn around to look at him, his eyes are dark and wide. You rest your forehead against his chest for a moment, breathing. Wolf holds very, very still. You can hear the sound of his heartbeat, steady, drowning out the sound of the mayhem raging on the other side of the door.
Print Shop. by Nina LaCour. Read by Dara Rosenberg. A high school parking lot at 11 p.m. My car under the bright light of a single street lamp. A lit-up classroom in the distance. And you next to me, asking how all of this started. You're so new to me, minutes new, and you're probably wondering why I'm trembling. And I might be reading too much into the way you faltered before you said hello, the blush that washed over your face. But I don't think so. It's early, I know. We've only just met. But this might be a love story, so I want to tell it the right way. I should start with Print Shop, the romance of it, the dark wood and the ink smell, the papers everywhere, sheets of it cascading off every surface, the old lights on the desks and the framed monotypes and screen prints, the mugs of steaming tea and Eduardo with his accent, and Nev with her pregnant belly, and especially Alexander, the shop owner, the artist, holed up in his office at all hours while his husband, Terry, calls and sighs and eventually shows up with a frown and dinner on a tray. And me, the bell jangling as I walk through the door in the beginning of the summer for my interview. I chose this shop because it was the only one I could find that didn't work digitally. They didn't even have a website. Everyone is always telling my generation that we aren't going to know how to engage with people. We're all going to end up with computer chips implanted in our brains and screens stuck in our eyes like contact lenses. But no one gives us any solutions. So I decided to find my own. Plus, I wanted to learn how to make that kind of magic. Ink and metal and screens and paper. I wanted to do something with my hands. Nev introduced herself and led me to two stools. Somehow, I had expected to be meeting Alexander, the owner, but I didn't. I heard his footsteps in the lofted studio above us, though. And I sat in the glow of one of the skylights that lit his space, prepared to give my best answers. "We need someone to help out and cover for me while I'm off," Nev told me, hands resting on her belly, explaining that the shop had a staff of only three. Alexander did all the printing, while Nev handled customers, and Eduardo managed the finances and the back end. "My dad had told me it's good to ask questions. It shows you're interested," he said, "and that you'll be a quick learner." "What does the back end consist of?" I asked. "Behind-the-scenes stuff, ordering the ink and paper. Basically, he deals with supplies and keeps the roof over our heads. I get sales. Alexander makes magic. So when the baby comes, it's going to be tough. Even the appointments have strained things a little. Every time the doctor calls, we're down 2/3 of our staff. The phones just ring and ring because Alexander refuses to talk to anyone." I glanced across the room to Eduardo, who was busy with a catalog. So he was the father? This was a question about which I was sincerely curious, but I didn't want to get too personal. But then Nev leaned forward and said, "We've been basking in a seemingly eternal youth, and now shit, I'm 37. I told Eduardo, now or never, and threw the condoms away." She leaned back and laughed. "Okay, thanks for tolerating my overshare. I like you. You're hired." "Oh," I said, "thanks." I shook my head to rid it of the image of the two of them having sex, and stood up to shake her hand. That's another lesson my dad taught me, the importance of a firm handshake. And thus began my 11-week wait. I spent my mornings researching print techniques so I could talk knowledgeably when customers called. And I'll be honest, I wanted to impress Alexander. I thought that maybe After so many years of doing this all on his own, he would want an assistant, an apprentice. I wanted to impress him so that maybe he would let me watch him work. In between learning printing terms, bleed, when the ink prints beyond the edge of the page, debossing, when an image is pressed into the paper instead of printed onto it, I tried not to check Instagram for posts from my ex-girlfriend. We'd been broken up for 3 months. She was headed to another state for college, and I was stuck here in my hometown for another year. So we were trying to be friends, which, since school got out, seemed to mean very little to her. As soon as the days got hot enough, a group of us would gather at Becky's or Kirby's house, the two of our group with pools in their backyards, and nibble away at their seemingly endless snacks. I always kept my phone near me, not for news or gossip, but in case the shop called me. At the end of July, I broke down and called to check in, fearing they'd changed their minds. But Nev assured me they were just behind, so swamped that it would still be a few more weeks. I just want to remind you that once school starts, I'll only have later afternoons and evenings and weekends, I told her. Oh, that's fine. Alexander rarely arrives before 2. And then, 2 nights before the beginning of the fall semester of my senior year, she called and said they were ready. Which brings me to this morning. Picture it. I am standing in the doorway. Everything I'm feeling, nervousness and determination and excitement, the weeks I've spent researching printing techniques, and the years I've spent pinning Alexander's work to my Pinterest page, it's all on my face. And so is a carefully blotted coat of red lipstick, a pair of chunky black glasses, and a little mascara. My hair is in a neat bun instead of the usual messy one, and I'm wearing a sleeveless shirt buttoned up to the collar and a pair of nice jeans. It took me ages to get it right. I wanted to feel like I belonged, even though I was 2 decades younger than the youngest of them. So I was standing in the doorway. I was ready to travel back in time to when people looked into each other's faces instead of at their phones, and used landlines to place calls, and worked with wood frames and cans of ink and brushes. The bell jangled, and the door shut behind me. And I heard Nev's voice saying, "Oh, principal, not principal. Shit. Okay, we thought it was like the principle of hope. We were actually a bit perplexed by the phrasing, but there was something sort of poetic about it. Welcome, Principal Hope." She spun in her chair, listening to the person on the other side of her call, and waved at me. I lifted my hand to wave back, and as my eyes adjusted from the bright summer morning to the dim, dusty clutter of the front office, I saw something. It was like one of those pictures in kids' activity books, find the object that doesn't belong. But instead of blending into the scenery, it leapt out at me. 2 silver and 2 new, 2 deliberately placed on a newly cleared-off patch of desk with a chair right in front of it. A chair that might as well have had my name on it. A laptop. My heart sank. "I sincerely apologize. We'll get a new one printed right away. When do you need it?" No, we can do it. I understand. I'll call you when I have an ETA. She hung up. What a shit show. But welcome. Eduardo, she's here. Eduardo appeared from the supply closet. "Happy first day," he said. But it was not quite the happy day I had imagined because, at their request, I was soon seated in front of the sole computer in the shop I had chosen for its lack of computers. "This is a really exciting day for us," Nev said. "We've been trying to convince Alexander for years that we need to have an online presence. Business is okay, but we rely almost exclusively on repeat customers, and some of our equipment could use updating.
Replacement, Eduardo said. More replacement than updating, unfortunately.
So, we need to reach a new pool of customers. We've been thinking about it, and then you walked in. A real live millennial. And we knew you could be the one to make it happen for us.
We need to hold on to our image, Eduardo said. Analog, classic, a little quirky.
But also serious, radical even, Nev said, gesturing to the upper wall with a row of framed prints from various resistance efforts. A cluster of them caught my eye. Audre Lorde and James Baldwin and Harvey Milk and Oscar Wilde. Alexander should be central, but not too prominent. More photos of the shop than the man. He likes to stay behind the scenes. So we need Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. What else? Snapchat, Pinterest, Flickr?
Wow, I said. I don't even have all those.
We can start small, Eduardo said. Just a couple. What would make the most impact?
Twitter, maybe?
They were eager, ready to believe me no matter what I said. Nev was wide-eyed and nodding, Eduardo's head tilted like a giant bird's, watching me for guidance. It was not at all what I expected. I thought they would be teaching me. I thought I'd be watching them this way.
It was my first day of my first ever job, and I came ready to take notes and try and make mistakes and learn from them. I was ready to absorb. But instead, they were asking me to impart. I was trying not to let the disappointment engulf me, trying not to think so much of the colors of ink and the techniques I'd been studying. This was not what I wanted, but it was something I knew how to do, so I resolved to make the best of it. If it helped keep this business going, then I would do what I could.
Social media is great, but we need something to direct it to, I said. We need a website.
Alexander said, no website, Nev said.
What about just a landing page, I asked. An image, your contact info, that's all we'd need. Super minimal.
Nev glanced at the closed door of Alexander's office, even though he wasn't there yet.
Eduardo shrugged.
A good compromise, he said. What Alexander doesn't know won't hurt him.
I set to work. Eduardo showed me how to use the shop's nice digital camera, and soon I was photographing prints, trying to get the lighting right, figuring out how to position myself so my shadow didn't get in the way.
This will be a great way to familiarize yourself with the work we do, Nev had said. And she was right. The shop had some of everything, from letter-pressed wedding invitations to original artwork. There were business cards and monogrammed stationery. There were limited edition books with thick pages and brilliant colors. But my favorite things were the posters. I couldn't tell what had been commissioned and what Alexander had decided to do himself. Some of them had his signature stamp in the bottom right corner, and those, I realized, were his own art. Most of them were intricate geometric designs, and they were all editions of 25. At last, I dragged a ladder over to the cluster of images that had caught my eye earlier. I had been saving them as a reward. It was a series, each with an image of a person and a quote by them below. They were all familiar to me because of Mr. Leahy, who was my sophomore English teacher and the first person I ever came out to. He's the one who first told me about Print Shop, actually, after I complimented a framed print that hung over his desk. The coming out was almost accidental, in the form of a love poem in a journal that I thought he would just check off and not read. But instead he wrote, "Love this one," below it, and gave me a check plus. Then, P.S. I have some great queer writers to recommend should you ever want something like that. It took me a couple of months of blushing and not meeting his eye. But then I finally stayed after school to ask, and he handed me a stack of books that he had apparently been saving for me all that time. I devoured them. When I wasn't sure of myself, those writers were sure of me. I was turning the lens, focusing on Audre Lorde's words that helped me then, and still help me sometimes, because even though my friends and family are fine with who I am, I know that plenty of people in the world and in our country are not, even if they hide it, even if they pretend they are saying one thing when they are really saying something else. Now the words were clear through my lens. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. And I snapped the picture and climbed down. The print shop handle was taken, no surprise there, so I added the name of our small California city, and printshopmartinez.com and @printshopmartinez were born. I found the perfect part of the shop to photograph. A weathered wooden table strewn with printed posters and cards, cast in light from the leaded glass window above it. I used it as the homepage for the website and simply added the name, street address, and phone number in small Helvetica type at the bottom. As minimal as it could be. Then I got to work on Twitter. I used the wooden sign with its hand-lettered print shop as the profile photo, and then the same table and window image as the background. Since I wouldn't be on the clock every day to tweet for them, I wanted to schedule daily tweets out about a week. "What do you want people to know about the shop?" I asked Nev. "Well," she said, and I held my pencil to the paper, ready to take notes. "We are not cheap, and we are not quick. But we care. A lot. We're attentive, or at least we try to be when we're not totally swamped and I'm not 8 months pregnant, and Alexander is the absolute best in the business. We're right for a certain type of client who wants a product that looks truly special, a discerning client. We have a solid reputation and a 30-year history. We champion progressive causes, and Alexander has done a lot of pro bono work. But maybe don't advertise that because I don't want to field a bunch of calls from people wanting things done for free. We use techniques that are almost obsolete, not because they should be, but because they take time and care and a level of dedication to master that most people aren't willing to exert. In other words, we're special. And we think our customers and their projects are special. She finished and smiled. Is that enough to start with? Absolutely. I had 2 pages of words and phrases to work with, so I took a seat at my laptop station and began composing our first day's tweets. "We've been around for 30 years, but we're brand new here. Please welcome us with a follow. We pride ourselves in quality over quantity. With us, you'll find excellence in both product and customer service. Print Shop, a discerning shop for the discerning client." Nev heaved herself out of her chair. "Off to pee for the 300th time today." Just as she got to the bathroom door, the phone rang. I looked at her, wondering if I should answer, but Eduardo picked up. "Yes," he said. "Oh, yes, the banner. Well, Alexander isn't in yet, but I assure you it is our top priority." "Right, yes. Today, yes. I'll let Nev know you called." "A history of progressive printing," I typed, and added the Audre Lorde image. I sat back. How would anyone find us if we had 0 followers? "It was the banner girl again," Eduardo said when Nev reemerged. "I really screwed that one up," she said, "and Alexander has the whole Jenkins order to complete today." She eased herself back into her chair. "One more question," I said to her. Do we have any friends, like businesses that we partner with? Take a look at the client list, she said. Some of them are well known. She pointed to a green binder on a shelf near me. Go ahead and look through that. So I spent some time searching for our most recent clients on Twitter and following them. Then I flipped through the binder and tweeted directly at the companies that have hired us and have a following. And one by one, people started following us back. Break time, Nev said to me. You can take between half an hour and an hour. Just make note of the time when you leave and get back and deduct it from your shift hours. Okay, great, I said. Before I left, I checked the scheduled tweets. One would go out when I was off, and then I'd reply to any others that came in and thank people for the follows when I got back. I got a burrito and ate it on the bright sidewalk patio of the restaurant. I ate fast, not wanting to take too long away. I checked my ex's Instagram and didn't find anything new, and then saw that I'd only been gone for 20 minutes. So I walked up and down the main streets of downtown, looking into the windows of the new stores that had sprouted up in the old, restored buildings. Things there were changing. A lot of the antique stores were gone, replaced by a hair salon and a boutique. A former photographer's studio where we'd had family portraits taken for a few years was now a wine bar. I began to understand why Printshop needed to step carefully into the present. The town was changing, and the shop didn't want to be forgotten or left behind. I was feeling great about how much I'd already accomplished when I got back. Nev and Eduardo were drinking iced tea from tall glasses, each working in silence at their respective stations. They offered me one, and I set it carefully next to the laptop and opened Twitter. There were 27 new follows, and a bunch of people tweeting to welcome us. But then a new reply came in. At Printshop Martinez. Are you kidding me? I clicked on it. It was in response to the excellence tweet that went out over lunch. Whatever, I thought. The internet can be a mean place. I clicked the person's profile. Only 300 followers, no big deal. But then, a few minutes later, another one came in. Late and wrong. How exactly is this customer service excellent? Hey, Nev? Yes? I'm sorry to bother you, but... She must have heard something in my voice, because she was soon next to me, looking at the screen. Hmm. Yeah, whoever it is, they don't have a huge following or anything. What should I say? Just then, the doorbell chimed. And there was Alexander, tall and thin, with a slight hunch in his shoulders, gray hair peeking out from under a straw hat, and a mug of coffee in hand as though he had come directly from his kitchen table. Good morning, he said to all of us, giving me an extra nod that sent a bright spark to my stomach. And a warm welcome to our new addition. Nev, it will be a busy day. Let's get right to the schedule. With that, he turned and ascended the stairs to his studio. Nev smiled at me and whispered, Don't worry, I'll make sure he learns your name. She waved toward the computer as though she could banish our disgruntled customer's problem with a single gesture. Just use your discretion with that. I trust you. Then she was making her way up the steep stairs, and Eduardo was placing a seemingly endless phone order, and the angry tweets were glaring at me from the screen. I searched for a few businesses' profiles to see how they responded to customers' complaints. I saw lots of so-sorries, lots of exclamation points, lots of personalizations, with people signing their first names or telling the customers the name of the person who would be getting in touch to fix the problem. One of them wrote, Beth will be getting in touch with you within the hour. She is the best. I realized that would feel good, to have a problem and then be told that the best would be helping me fix it. I switched back over and wrote, at Lauren in real life. So sorry to hear about your experience. Please give us a call to talk to Ned.